Let me apologize. We were supposed to have a press tea here before we started the norm. I don't know what happened, but let's keep our fingers crossed and hope that it can. While they are distributing mandates, welcome to all of you. Just to remind members that, by the way, this afternoon in the council, we are going to deliberate on the Bikoni issue. I hope members are ready for that debate this afternoon. And again, one of the agenda items in the council today is to report back to the House about the second-hand goods bill, to report back on what transpired during the mediation process. We are having our normal reform of customary law of succession and regulation of legislative bill that we're going to finalize today. I'm rightly informed that we are having the majority of provinces mandate. So it will make our life easy to be able for us to pass this bill today. And immediately after that, we'll be taken through the five-year rule that we might, if we are spoken to nicely, we might decide to pass it to indulge them. That will depend on how are they going to talk to us. Because that will go with the mood for the person addressing the COVID. We'll take it from there. Tomorrow, we'll be getting a briefing about the Constitution 16 Amendment Bill. Hopefully, the NA will have finalized it today. Because we can only go to the formal stage if the bill has been passed by the National Assembly. We'll keep our fingers crossed. We can take care of this information to you, colleagues. I'm having this many full stops while addressing you, colleagues, because I'm looking at my office. They're all of them busy with their papers and stuff. I wonder if they'll be able to capture all what we said now in their sequence. I hope they'll be able to do that in their sequence. What was raised this meeting? I hope they're able to capture them nicely because I'll need those minutes tomorrow. Having said that, I want to welcome Lawrence Professor Therese, who are now part of this family in terms of this deal for us. Yeah, because we like their faces. One member was proposing to me before start that, why can't we defer passing it until next week? But we meet every day until Friday. Then only pass it next week, so that we keep our heads and rest and yet. But they're so good to us, so we plan to meet them ready. And I'm about to conceive to that respect. But yeah, I only remember having the those Mondays before that. They are supposed to be 6 or 7. Mpumalanga are sending us their mandates. Yes. Yes. In our last meeting, colleagues, I remember that we made some few proposals to the bill, and we. You remember that we requested the department to go and draft them, and they brought them to us. The purpose being that when we send these minutes to provinces, they must have those amendments so that they see what are we amending. And that was done. What has remained is for us in our report to identify those issues that need to be followed up. I suspect those issues have been itemized because I want them to reflect in the report we're going to adopt today if we pass the bill. Is there something you want to say here? Well, welcome to the Office of the State Law Advisor and Mr. Herman and your team. Welcome. Herman Smith, welcome to your team. Beyond, you're part of us. You can see that is Kosana here. I'm sure he's coming for the next item. yes. Colleagues were honored and blessed that to me is in attendance. We're very honored there, colleagues. Thank you very much. It's an honor really. Have to me in number. That must be recorded. yes. Welcome, Doc. I got your apology that there could be some tenderness. I got your apology. Is there something you want to talk to us about Lawrence and Taylor before we go formal and ask members to talk to their mandate, final mandate from province. Is there anything Teresa and Lawrence want to address us on before we request provinces to talk to their mandate? Lawrence and Teresa?
Chair, I'm not sure. I think everything that that needs to be said is said. The documents were distributed. The bill as it was amended by the committee, as well as the formal amendments, so those were submitted to the provinces. And it's on the basis of those that the final mandate to come back. Can I ask Mr. Levin perhaps just to say a few words? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just very briefly, Chair, you will recall that the amendment that you drafted in regard to the involvement of the traditional leader in a dispute or uncertainty in regard to the consequences of the nature of the customary law, you recommended that that the matter either be referred in those instances to either a magistrate or a traditional leader. You will also recall that when this matter was placed on the on the table of this committee, and I think it was done by Mpumalanga province, we argued that the magistrate will always be in a position to call the particular traditional leader to assist him and to testify before him in regard to any aspect that might be uncertain or unclear for the as far as the magistrate is concerned. You then requested that we draft, the committee requested that we draft the amendment which is now in the bill and which for which you have received a mandate from the provinces. And this was done at very short notice. You will recall you decided about this amendment, and the following day we drafted the amendment. Subsequent to that, we had further discussions with our minister and the deputy minister, and we have come up with a new amendment which we would just like to mention to you, Chair. As I have said, we accept that you have already received mandates for the amendment as it is in the bill at the moment. But we once thought about this matter once again after further discussions that we had, and we thought that perhaps it would be more appropriate in this case because the viewers expressed that there might be legal issues involved in a question of this nature, and it would be probably then more appropriate for a magistrate to deal with it. What we did was we looked at drafting a further amendment which we would just like to mention to you, and it's then for you to decide how to take the matter forward. And that is, Chair, that we provided in the bill that before a magistrate makes a recommendation in terms of this referral to him by the master, that where it is reasonable and appropriate and where he thinks it is in the best interest of the winding up of the estate, that he then can also then refer the matter to a traditional leader who has knowledge of the custom in that particular area for him to advise the magistrate. And on the basis then of that advice and all the other information at the disposal and of the magistrate and his knowledge and experience of the law, to then, on the basis of all that information, make a recommendation to the master. That is the amendment that we did draft for you to consider. We didn't put it before the committee. We just thought that we would mention it and then, as I said, then leave it up to the committee to decide what it feels would be more appropriate to follow. The amendment just reads as follows, before I close my address to you. Before the magistrate makes a recommendation under subsection 4, he or she must, where reasonably practicable and in a prescribed manner, obtain the customary position in respect of the matter in dispute from a traditional leader who is regarded as an authoritative source in respect of the customs which have a bearing on the deceased estate, which is being wound up. So we thought that we would just like to put this on the table for your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you very much. In terms of the same proposal, by the way, what was our formulation? That's addressing the very same concern. Because where the formulation that was agreed to by the committee?
Formulation with the amendments in, let me just get the documents here. Get clause 5. And there are a few subsections being amended. Subsection 2 reads, before making a determination under subsection 1, the master may direct that the inquiry into the matter be held by a magistrate, and the committee proposed that or a traditional leader be inserted. So before making a determination under subsection 1, the master may direct that an inquiry into the matter be held by a magistrate and a traditional leader in the area in which the master has jurisdiction. Then there were consequential amendments in subclauses 3 and 4, which read as follows. Subclause 3 reads, after the inquiry referred to in subsection 2, the magistrate or traditional leader, as the case may be, must make a recommendation to the master who directed that an inquiry be held. And subsection 4 reads, the master, in making a determination, or the magistrate or traditional leader, as the case may be, in making a recommendation referred to in this section, must have due regard to the best interests of the deceased's family members and the equality of spouses in customary and civil marriages. So there were three subsections being amended. The new proposal would mean that the insertions that the committee has requested in clauses 2, 3, and 4 come out, and that a new clause 3, which Mr. Adman has read to, be inserted.
Yeah, I might be slow in thinking, but my sense tells me that today we're considering issues that were raised through the negotiating process. No new issues will be entertained today, except those issues that were there during the negotiating process. Surprisingly, my department, the one that's supposed to lead us and advise us, is now bringing some new amendments. Another amendment, it means the workshop. We cannot pass this bill to the workshop, drop it and send the province again. So they look into the proposal by the department. So it means the colleagues are not going to pass this bill today. We'll send this thing back to the province so that they look into it. I don't know whether they're going to bring it back. So we can pass this bill today. We can as well round up and just then so that we allow Kosana to talk and leave the customer at the end for next week or that or whenever we be available. Because we don't have a mandate to insert things that are not seen by our provinces. That's the rule of Parliament, not the Mukwena's rule or this member's rule. That's the rule of the game, unfortunately. So, I don't know, Dion, you are here, and the department were aware that they were busy doing this. Why didn't they send this thing before? Only now. I don't have to use a strong language, but if we are going to be seen to be undermined by the executive, we are going to accept this. Convey this message that we are very much uncomfortable with how they are conducting, they are taking this committee. That all day with the time to make any proposal during the negotiating process, even before that. But now we're not supposed to pass this bill that brings this thing to us. It's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. So, colleagues, there we are. The minister and deputy minister are saying the formulation that we had earlier on is not acceptable to them. They want to have their own formulation in mind. So, the matter is plain before you. Before we go to the formal stage, I want us to entertain this proposal from the minister and deputy minister. Honorable Eleru, at the end of the afternoon, please want to send that on.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, there must be a very compelling reason why this has happened. I wonder if the department can give us a little bit more light on the subject.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I don't think we need to place the ball before the representative. The procedure, it is known. When we deal with the 76 bill, there's always a negotiating mandate and there's always a final mandate. Now, we propose things and send them back. Today we have the mandate which we are now actually able to deal with. There's a new proposal. The department is an integral partner in us and whatever you're doing, we are together. But if they would bring things outside the scope, sir, I find it difficult how do we accommodate that. But nonetheless, I think we take your route that the provinces must actually be now given an opportunity exercise their view on this issue so that they can give us a mandate that is actually been agreed by the provinces. We should not say, yes, by the way, there's a mandate that was brought. In fact, there's a proposal which was brought during the discussion of mandate, and we felt that that should be put in or should be rejected. It's not our mandate to do that. We take the mandate from there. And I think the route you're saying, it would be an appropriate route. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mac.
Thanks, Ntuthuko. Now, this is a big concern, James. It's not that easy in just bringing it and passing it. You know, it has to go back to provinces. And then, at this moment, we are struggling with provinces. They are closing down. They are closing. Provinces don't want XPS even to come and brief. Now we must go there, we must go and brief them again. Then there's another thing. These provinces might have public hearings. How long is this going to stretch again on this? And at the end, I'm fearing with the same executive will then pressure us to pass this book, which now looks to me it will be impossible to pass this book. And that is my concern, because they have to go back to provinces. We have to brief them on this new amendment. They will have to go on public hearings. How long is it? So almost another 4 weeks or 6 week cycle. And that is my concern. And then we will be pressurized to get this mandate back and to pass this bill again. Who's prolonging now the passing of this bill? Irrespective, I agree with all the previous inputs. And I also agree there must be some motivation why this is done. You can't just come and say, do this, put in this new amendment without any motivation. Then you are really undermining us in this committee chair. Thank you.
Yes, Lawrence, Teresa, there's a proposal from the department. I hope you discuss this before you come. So we defer passing this bill until we to look into this proposal by the executive that we are going to refer this bill back. I don't know when I'm going to pass it. We'll give the province another 4 weeks, a 4 week cycle to look into. So maybe we'll pass the next parliament. So can you address us, Lawrence and Teresa?
Chair, I'm going to address on one aspect, and I think Mr. Edmund will take over. When we were having the deliberations, Mr. Edmund's already said, Teresa pointed out that what our responses were at that initial stage. So there were reservations from the department side originally on having a traditional leader there. And I also mentioned the reservations that the traditional courts bill in the process of being developed, and it looks at the jurisdiction of traditional leaders in a more holistic manner, and the problems I mentioned, the problems and sensitivities that we've experienced on that in respect of that bill in the portfolio committee, and that bill specifically excludes traditional leaders from becoming involved in succession matters. So I just wanted to place that on the table as well. So there has been a reservation, but the department accepted, like we do when the committee has made up its mind, that this is the amendment that must be placed in there, which we did do when we last met, I think last Thursday, and we did it quickly because we were under pressure to have it done. And it was sent to the provinces immediately. These discussions with the minister took place after that, so that is the unfortunate situation. But I thought let me just place that perspective on that.
Yes,
I think Lawrence has explained what the procedure was and why we put this amendment on the table now. And let me please say that we're really not here to undermine this committee. That is never the intention. it can never be and it will never be. We accept that you are the legislators,
Chair,
but we also have a responsibility, and our responsibility is to advise you. If you don't accept our advice, then obviously, as the legislature, you decide what eventually it is that you're going to put in the bill. So please, please accept that from our side as the department and the executive that we're not here to undermine. We've worked very well with this committee for many, many years, and we've always tried our best to put the best advice possible before this committee. It was subsequent, as Lawrence has indicated, to this amendment being drafted, that we looked at the matter again, and we thought that this would possibly be a more appropriate amendment. But, Chair, if you decide that the route to go is the one that you've decided on already, then you should do so. That is then your choice as legislator to take that decision. We just thought that we would like to put this before you for your consideration, as I said right at the outset, just for your consideration, that is to accommodate the concerns that you have raised previously in this meeting. To try to accommodate those concerns, we thought of this amendment. It was drafted only, I think, day before yesterday, over the weekend it was drafted. And we thought that we would just like to place that for your consideration before you take a final decision on the legislation.
Thank you very much, Chuck. And just to show if the implication of the what you recommended was very clear, that if you drafted this amendment over the weekend, you have not seen them, that before we pass this bill, it is supposed to go, those amendments, based on the amendment that you have, that it should go back to the provinces for the provinces to make. Do you really understand those implications? And did you take into account that the parliament, the president has already proclaimed and accepted the date of the election? The parliament might be closing very soon. And if you did understand those implications, taking into account that if you go back to the problem, it might take another 2 seconds. You understand it might mean that this fund, this bill might be referred to the next part. What that I understand?
Yes, I must say that I don't see that any of the things that I think you want to fish up on the mind. By the other side. I really don't think it was the intention. I think it's just a matter that Max, if I must act now on Max, I think it's a matter of undermining his major on Chelsea. Please don't. We have a great appreciation for the assistance that we get from the department in the legislation. And as I see, Chairperson, I see that the proposed amendment, which we do not, I don't have for me, is to accommodate the concerns raised by the committee. Is that correct? I'm not sure. Yes, so that's all I was just saying. Once we get that amendment, then we can have a look at it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like to let on my colleague and say that I'm sure that there's never an intention to undermine this committee. I mean, we've worked together with our lawyers and our advisors over many years, and in 15 years, I have never seen any undermining taking place. So, really, gentlemen, we appreciate what you do, and we have great respect for your knowledge. Secondly, sir, if you employ a lawyer or an advocate, I have found over the years it's better to listen to them than to listen to yourself. And I think it will be dangerous if we do not take very careful note of what comes from the minister and what our lawyers are advising us. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
I'm trying to understand exactly where are we now? What are we pressing upon? Because what's happening here, we are saying this proposal by the department has some serious implications. Because as this component here, we cannot pass and accept this amendment as a seated here. We have to send them back to the province. Exactly what I read earlier on, what was complimented by Honorable Mosaic. To say that is the department proposing that we don't have this bill today and send back? Because it might lapse, because some of us will be comfortable to say, okay, let's lapse. The next parliament will see if they will resuscitate this bill again. That's the chief of the concern here. So the department, why were they not sending this proposal when we're busy negotiating? So that their views can be also sent to provinces so that they look into their formulation. Today we're supposed to pass the bill, they bring new proposal. That's the gist of the concerns we're raising. Now, that's when I, as the chairperson said, I feel as if the executive is undermining the parliament. Because there's all the means in the world to send the officials to come and make a presentation, bring the very same proposal that we're not being negotiating. But now, Honorable Leru, there is no way you can pass it before you get any view from the Eastern Cape to say what are they saying about this proposal. That's all we're saying. So the implication that is there now is for the department to tell us, yes, committee, can you please be so understanding? You don't pass this bill today. Let it be sent back to provinces. We'll see when are they going to respond. Basically, that's what Honorable Mayor is saying. Like now, it's also difficult to get the mandate because people are out there working, as we are aware. Because we'll be closing very soon. That has the indication that it's facing us now. We've got two choices, really. To accommodate the department and not pass the bill, refer this thing back to the approval. Or we don't accommodate the department and the proposal. We take to our original proposal as read by Honorable Patel. Those are the two choices we're going to make today. Yeah, is there any other hand before I allow the other one?
Chairperson. I don't think the phrase or the utterance of undermining is an issue here to me. It's not an issue. Look, we come a long way with the department. For 15 years, if I may probably put that on record, the very two faces before us, they would sit with us even during the middle of the night. The next morning, they would give you the proposal. This is the proposal. I cannot understand today why was this thing probably kept till very late. If we talk about Mr. Rutman, he's open. We go a long way. Draft my hands, they write back. He knows the procedure. And the problem that we've been encountering, we could not pass this bill, is when the province, instead of giving a final mandate, they make proposals. But now today, it's like the department that makes it. That is the thing that I cannot understand. Thank you, sir.
Honorable Nyanda.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will go for the proposal that we have proposed. Let them think themselves that they either need the amendment or we deal with this one that comes from the provinces so that we can pass this bill. Otherwise, we are dissolving the parliament this Friday. There will be no chance to deal with this bill. Thank you, Chairman.
Can the department respond to those two choices that we're to make as a committee?
Chair, thank you. Thank you very much. Once again, I would like to apologize for the fact that we brought it to you now. I just spoke to Lawrence and yes, it's true. This amendment was drafted only yesterday. It was drafted yesterday, and it was drafted on the basis of discussions that we had with the Ministry as well as further research that we did during the course of the of last week. Chair, I've now listened to the committee, and I would like to beg your indulgence, Chair, that you have another item on the agenda, the budget rules. If you would allow me, Chair, just half an hour for me to consult with my principals and just discuss it with them, and I promise that I would be back in about half an hour. And we all know that this bill is very urgent and very important. We all accept that, and we would like to see the bill passed. There's no doubt about that. We would not like to delay finalization of this bill. It still needs to go back to the NA, and time is running out. So if you will allow me just half an hour, Chair, then I will be back, and we can take the matter forward, and hopefully we can then finalize the matter.
Maybe before you what I'll have to check with my colleagues if the request would be accepted. What is the difference between the formulation that was drafted by Lawrence and what you are, that comes from the minister? What is the difference between the two formulations?
Chair, the major difference is that the one drafted by the, or proposed by the committee, is that the traditional leader, well, master had a choice whether to send a dispute to a magistrate or to a traditional leader. And if he decides to send it to the magistrate, the magistrate will hold the inquiry, the full inquiry. If he sends it to the traditional leader, the traditional leader will hold the full inquiry. The proposal on the table is that the magistrate holds the inquiry, but gets inputs from the traditional leader.
Otherwise, the proposal from the minister, they are not happy that the master, when he or she feels fit, can also send this thing to the present leader. They don't trust the present leader. They don't trust. Colleagues, here is the request by John Rodman that he wants to consult with the past about the procedure maintained with the COVID 2030. So I think can I try and persuade you? Let's give them that answer that they can. How do you take it?
Roger, I think as Mr. Rodman will go and consult, I think one important thing that we need to say is that, you know, we are transforming each other. Whatever we are doing, the understanding should be done. Some of the things that were done in the last 350-something years denied, they actually undermined the tradition, the culture, the values of Africa. Now, if we are to be a self-respecting nation, tradition, values, and culture of the indigenous Maasai, I think that should be understood very clearly. Now, if we perpetuate this thing, continue as this balance, continue to undermine it, in the long run, it's going to create serious problems. I just thought this point is very important to me, because that's what I actually said. Despite what we're saying about transformation is very important. We still want to continue to be things that undermine our own way. Thank you very much.
I don't know who spoiled it. Well said. Yeah, I think the request is granted. The contact the principal in the next 30 minutes. Just come in. Okay. On that note, we defer the discussion on the customary bill. will now welcome Ndatesko Sana, who is going to address the committee about those rules. I'm so unfortunate today. Everything is given to me, but not me. Welcome to the committee. You'll introduce your team, then from there, fire from the heat. Over to you.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Member, present here. We are hoping to have the motive fine for us to keep it. And we also hope that one be sent taking as well, like my colleagues. Just that was on a lighter note. Just to introduce, I'm here with Professor Holton Chisholm. He is the Minister's Special Advisor. And I will basically by brief introduction indicate where he fits in the whole process. The House will have realized that this is a culmination of a number of of rules which were presented, tabled by the Minister with yourselves and the Speaker of the National Assembly. This is so because the current Act, the Promotion of Pharmacy Justice Act, basically gives Parliament two options when the rules are presented. It's either reject or accept. The Act is not drafted in a way that Parliament can effect amendments. So whenever Parliament rejects, we must go back, withdraw their rules, factor in the comments of Parliament, and reintroduce their rules. So that has been the pulling and throwing of the whole process. That's how the Act is drafted, and we hope that to the extent that may reveal some challenges and weaknesses will be remedied along the way also. So this should be around the sixth or the seventh rules that have been presented have been tabled before ourselves also. And what has made this version to be more acceptable to all parties involved is that after the last rules were tabled and after it emerged that there were some areas of discontent between the department, the board, and parliament, and the portfolio committee, it was then resolved to establish a task team. The minister withdrew the rules and established a task team comprising, led by his special advisor, comprising the rules board, and were also honored to have a member of the portfolio committee serving in the task team. So the rules which are before us here are basically the product or the outcome of the work of the task team, inclusive task team also. And I think I will just give a broad framework of the rules and allow Professor Chidlin, who has been driving the process, to basically reflect on the detail of the rules, especially on those aspects which are important for this House to know. Also to state upfront that when we presented the rules to the portfolio committee last week or so, there were quite a number of submissions and oral hearings which were submitted, which were made on the rules, and there was an opportunity for those concerns and submissions to be considered into this revised text of rules. And this morning, the portfolio committee was able to adopt and vote on the rules with those amendments. Basically, much of the amendments, much of the concerns which raised were in terms of the time frame, which allowed people to make requests and to ask for documents from the administration, which they want to pursue, also they want to approach the court to have their decision reviewed also. And I think there were some adjustments in terms of those dates, the timelines, which process would be led to a session. So basically the rules as submitted to the House today comprises of three parts. The first part relates to application of the rules. One of the main things which was discussed over a long time was whether the rules should apply to your constitutional court or any other court other than the high court and the lower court. And that debate, of course, the rules board and the chief justice and the department moved forward and backward, etc. What has been resolved finally and which is basically seen to be an appropriate provision is that these rules basically apply to the Magistrates Court and the High Court, and any other court which would like to have their rules applicable to them will basically adopt their rules as they are or will change them. Therefore, the Constitutional Court is free to adopt their rules as drafted as they are, or they could basically make them in a way that is suitable to their circumstances. As we know that we still have a dispensation where the Chief Justice can basically draft rules in terms of the special legislative framework that has been provided under the Constitution. So that's the first part. And the second part is carried out with the definition. The most important aspect which has been brought under the definition is the whole opportunity for mediation. We all know that our courts are loaded, are congested, etc. So this provides a mechanism where there are disputes between the requests, etc. There will then be a request either by the person requesting for a reason, or by the judicial officer who could deal with the application to arrange for mediation as part of the pre-conference arrangement. Those matters can be resolved and be dealt with without being subject to a long, tedious, litigious route or so. That's one of the advantages that's been brought in here. And as I said, the third part is, and then we have the request for reason, which can be made in terms of these rules by any person who wants to challenge any decision of an administrator, and for their request for disclosure or discovery, where the requester can basically ask for documents, a list of documents from the administrator, which will enable him or her to prepare for those kind of application to court, etc. There are basically safety measures to ensure that the rules are not going to allow to provide for the mechanism to be abused by those who may just ask for reasons while they're not pursuing the matter to finality also, because we all know that the whole process of providing information may become onerous on government process. And then obviously the last part deals with the application itself to court, etc. The rules are accompanied by forms at the end. And if honorable members would note, there's a shaded and unshaded part. The shaded part is intended to explain to the requester. This is a new legislative procedure, which is tedious. So we thought that because ordinary people would not have had insight to the rules, etc., it's good for them to understand right up front how to fill their form, when will and how to request information, how to table their requests, etc., and also guide the administrators themselves, because as we all know that this is a new process that's going to ensure a responsive and accountable administration, and therefore the explanation in the shaded way, in the shaded part, are basically explanatory, while the information on the unshaded is the information to be filled by the requests, etc. One point I wanted to raise before prosecutors elaborate on what I said is that this being the first set of rules that are basically detailed in terms of giving right to access to fair and justice towards foreign citizens, we are mindful of the fact that it will take us quite a long time to grasp and understand that perfect system. We don't have much precedent in the world because, as we all know, our constitution is very exemplary. Instead, other jurisdictions want to learn from us. So the portfolio committee this morning agreed that they will basically provide in their report for a 24-month review of their rules to see what impact they are making, what improvement needs to be put into it, what can be percepted from their rules, etc. So those are kind of the things that I thought I would bring to the attention of this committee as they move forward is liberation of the rule successor. And one critical aspect that it will have to be accompanied by extensive training of magistrates, judges, because a new environment, etc. Hence, we have put in the rules that until that training has taken place, the rules will not become immediately applicable. They will basically, once Parliament has adopted the rules, there will then be a plan of action in terms of which magistrates and judges will be put into a training program. Then the rules will then be put by a proclamation into operation once that process has taken place. Otherwise, we are going to get people frustrated by the judicial system in terms of responding to the request that may flood the court also. Basically, those are the general introduction to the rules as they appear before the House, before the Select Committee now. And I ask Professor Chidwell just to emphasize those critical points where there was a key policy decision articulated and debated during the public hearings on the rules. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think Kasana has given a very full description of the issues contained in the rules. I suppose I would just want to emphasize a few aspects. The first is that administrative review of administrative decisions, granting of firearm licenses, granting of planning permission in the municipality, all these kinds of decisions, are currently, if you wanted to challenge them, you'd have to go to the High Court and you'd have to follow what is called a Rule 53 procedure. The Rule 53 procedure is one in which the applicant brings in a formal application to court and in that application asks for the record. And then the administrator, the person who made the decision, has to supply the full record. Although it need not always be full, in practice, what happens is that the full record is produced. Then the applicant, after looking at the record, can supplement the paper. So there are two issues that are problematic with that. The first is that the applicant has two bites of the cherry, and it drives up costs. Secondly, it allows for fishing expeditions. So what you do is you go to court with an application. You're unhappy with the fact that the national lottery has been awarded to another bidder. So what you do is you go to court, and then you insist on the whole record being produced. Well, when we look at the national lottery, you're looking at in the region of about 200,000 pages of material. And not even talking about the stuff that's on database. So the impact is a massive burden on the state. Lawyers have to sift through this information because some of it's confidential, some of it's not confidential, some of it can be disclosed, some of it can't be disclosed, driving up legal costs. What has happened to the challenge to the National Lotteries Board in October last year? They went fishing and they didn't find any fish. So they have not proceeded with their application. Meanwhile, the Minister and the National Lotteries Board, both cited as respondents in those matters, have had to produce a huge record, and nothing has taken place. So that's the problem with Rule 53. It's the automatic production of a record. Now, not in all cases are the records very large, but in very big cases, particularly the competitive bids, the procurement-type cases, the record is huge. Just think of the fishing rights applications. I was personally involved in advising Marine Coastal Management on the fishing rights. We're talking sometimes about 1,000 applications for crayfish licenses. Each application itself is the size of a file. That's about 1,000 files. And so it really is critical to realize what the implications of Rule 53 are. But Rule 53 has a very good principle in it. The principle is, how can you take the administrator on review if you don't have sight of the documents? If you don't have sight of the documents upon which the administrator made the decision? And that's the anomaly. And the solution in Israel, is to provide for pre-application discovery. So this is the first time it's happened in our law procedure. But we now provide for pre-application procedure. And what we've done is we've adopted the ordinary rules of discovery. Now, discovery for the non-lawyer is the process in which parties in litigation can require the other party to disclose all the documents, all the relevant documents that that party has in their possession. And that may be used for or against them in their case. So that's what happens. If you sue, then you ask for discovery at the end of the pleading, and you get a discovery affidavit. Discovery affidavit states the documents, relevant documents that you can have access to, relevant documents you can't have access to because of privilege, attorney-client privilege, for example. And the third category are those documents that were in your possession, but now in someone else's possession. So that discovery affidavit has to be produced in every action, and even in the application, on application to the court. So really what we've done is we've taken our ordinary discovery rules, we've changed them barely, and moved the date forward. So we allow, in effect, a pre-application discovery. If you're serious about bringing a case, you have prima facie grounds to review, you can ask for discovery. And that requires the administrator not to produce the record, not to copy this huge record, but merely to provide a discovery affidavit. And that affidavit merely states, these are the documents I relied on for my decision, which you can look at. These are the ones that I relied on for my decision, which you can't look at. Attorney, a legal opinion, for example, from an advocate. And these are the documents that were in my possession, but now are no longer in my possession. And then that allows the applicant, the person who wants to bring a case against, to challenge the decision of the administrator, to go and inspect the documents, just in the same way as any other litigant is entitled to inspect documents in an application or in an action, in a case. You have a look at the documents, that side of the documents, and now you bring your application based on those documents. And if you want to use the documents, then it's the applicant's job to copy them. In most cases, it's unlikely that you ever need the whole record. All you really need is one part of the record, or one set of the document. Let me give you an example. If you're challenging the delegation, if you're challenging that the administrator does not have delegated authority to bring the review, well, you don't need the transcript then. All you need are the delegation documents. And that's all that would then be produced. So what's really happening here is we're taking our ordinary rules of discovery and applying it in a dedicated way to judicial review of administrative actions. So that's really, I think, the central idea here. How do we lessen the burden on the state and at the same time hold government accountable? And hold government accountable by allowing parties to see the document upon which the decision against them was made, the adverse decision which was made against them. The third principle, I think, introduced by these rules are the forms that that Mr. Scassano spoke about. You'll see those forms, I think, deal with the principle of access to justice. What we're trying to do in those forms is what was done in the Labor Relations Act with the CCMA form. Those CCMA forms are written for people to advise them how to fill in the form so that they can make a proper request for reason, so that they can make a proper request for information. And then there are forms for administrators to respond. But those are the three principles. Now, how would pre-application discovery work? It's been tried yet. Well, we have one very good comparative example. Pre-application discovery was introduced in 1976 by Lord Wolfe in the United Kingdom when he overhauled the civil procedure rules in the United Kingdom. And they've had pre-application discovery in respect of all matters, not just judicial review. And pre-application discovery has worked well. There have been abuses. But the court is there to regulate and control the abuse. if there is comparative experience that this can work, and I know that if we apply our rules of discovery to free application discovery, we are going to that this becomes, it is the way that you deal really with two what appear to be conflicting principles, burden on the state in respect of the record, and on the other hand, creating accountability, allowing people who want to take an administrator's decision on a planning permission or a license of one kind or another to look at the documents on which that decision was based.
Thank you very much. Don't come in as a concern, or should we now engage you? That's fine. Thank you very much for taking us through these rules. These are major changes. Major changes. I think that this will excite some lawyers and some of us. Dr. Frank Niersen and Honorable Leroux and Honorable Moses in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I must confess that I didn't go through all the documents. I just listened to the presentation by the gentleman. And my question regarding the no longer application of the three sounds good. I can envisage a situation where a decision is being taken by an administrator on documents that cannot be made available to the applicant. And structure that. Don't you think that there must be some sort of provision that I, in such a case, you know, if I get the documentation, some of the documentation are no longer in your possession, some documentation are privileged, but in any case, the person took a decision and the decision was based on certain three sets of documents. One he can supply to, the other one he can't, but the other one is no longer in his position. In such a situation, don't you think that one should, in any case, allow or make provision in the rules that the applicant in such a situation at his cost may apply for
thank you, Dr. Conamulero.
Thank you, Jane. Thank you for the interesting presentation. Obviously, those of us who are not lawyers need a bit of time to think about this. These are probably more important things than what we realize. I would first of all like to know, what are the time frames we're looking at? Is there an urgency for us to do something straight away? Secondly, what happened at the portfolio committee? Were they voting? Was it a unanimous decision they took? Are we going to get briefed by anybody from outside on what all this can mean to practicing lawyers? Thank you.
Thanks, Father Herrero. Thank you,
Chairperson. Chairperson, it is indeed an animal to us. To chase this animal, it hasn't got horns, so we don't know how he wants to catch it. But nonetheless, there are two aspects that I picked up, and which also disadvantage us is that the new document just came this morning, which entails everything and an amendment and proposal that we made. But nonetheless, there are two things that Mhlanga made mention of the abuse of the rules. Now, if one follows that rule, now who determines that an applicant is actually on the route of abusing the bill? So I mean the rule. Because a person will only make an application if he's adversely affected by the decision taken. And that person can actually make an application. I don't think any person can wake up one day and go and watch them and request the record to be put at his or her disposal. Now, this brings us back to the very act that has been a thorny issue, access to information.
where a state can refuse to give you a name, access to the information. Where now even the administrator may, if you read the item for right from the form A, where it says you must explain why you are materially and adversely affected by the administrator's action. The administrator may refuse to provide you with a reason or a document if you have not been affected. I think item 5 goes even further because it speaks of 90 days. That I can understand because it is assumed you should have been aware after 90 days. But now, if that may refuse, it puts you in a corner. You may probably say, yes, I'm affected on this issue, and I would like to have that portion. How do I know that that portion has been audited? Just to give me the information that they want to give, rather than giving it to me and see how it is being reflected on the original document, rather than give me the outline or the decision is taken on base this A, B, C, D, but I don't see the record. How do we probably going to overcome that? Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Now, we agree that it simplifies the listing of not the producing these bulk records and but the question is as an applicant, I demand still to have this bulk information. Will I be entitled to get the volume? Secondly, in terms of the request for reasons and disclosures, there are reasons there for a refusal by the administrator who may refuse the request for reasons. One of the reasons for refusal is if those written reasons are publicly available and the request is informed of where and how they are available. I will not pass in the back here trying to build a fence around the administrator, not to do his or her job. Because if you refer to the law, there is whatever is available somewhere, they go in and get it. To me, I think one is passing the back. Don't you think we are a bit unreasonable to stick to the request I am? Now, on 5C, it says if the administrator may refuse the request, for instance, if the requester is not a person whose rights are materially and adversely affected by the administrative action. Now, if I'm listening on I'm not in the form, I'm just one document that's given to us on the supporting document that's on page 5. I then I was singing the same song. The same person can read. I can read. Now, this reason here on I'm saying if I'm acting on behalf of someone, you might feel that this person is not directly or adversely affected or materially affected, but as a request, I feel no. my right have been trusted by this need information. If I still don't have an evidence to lose them pay the lawyer, I know. You can't just let go of that difficult those mandates. Those instructions, legal language. But instructions represent. Yeah. Those are the few questions from this side really. If I had my way, I don't think we will come on this rule. Because that will be implemented in I don't really have a strong feeling about us delaying the benefit. Really, I want to make a discourse and I want to make this day. But it's also unreasonable. But that will depend how you address me when you go to the platform now. You know? Because if he's smart, very smart, I must persuade my colleagues that we adopt this rule so that we enable the department that is our judicial officers to go and implement these rules because of their agents. So I leave here some of the burden that is there by our judicial officers and our administrators. That was my take on the matter. But I'm also being, I can agree to persuade it by my colleagues, but I don't think why should we really keep this in our agenda. Having so many bills, you know that they were having the cross boundary municipality bill that is coming to us. Whatever. But it's just a proposal from the chairperson. I'm not saying take it, it's just a proposal. Questions were put, can I allow the department to respond? Yes, Professor Shetler, this question.
We deal with the first issue. I hope that that you'll feel a lot more confident about the issues asked. Question of the whole record. Could someone demand the whole record? Well, what you demand on discovery is no more than a list and access to documents. And so you're entitled to the relevant documents that are on part A of the form. And those are the documents that are relevant and which are disclosable. Part B of the form are those documents that are confidential and privileged. And so those documents are not normally made available. But you can apply to court. So Rule 35 applies, continues to apply. It applies in a limited way for pre-application, but it applies in full to after application. So under 35.13, Uniform Court Rules, I'm talking about the High Court Rules. What's important about these rules is that they have been drafted in order to be embedded in our rules. In other words, these are not just plumped on top. They are intimately linked with the different rules that apply in the High Court. Now, I'm speaking High Court language here, but the same thing will apply to the Magistrates Court. Now, at Rule 35 of the High Court Rules, provides that in an application, an applicant can apply for further and better discovery. Well, 13 says you do it by court, and then all the other parts of Rule 35 apply. So, if there's and we know that in discovery you can discover confidential documents. So, effectively, the whole record can be produced, but a court monitors the production of it, and the court's going to ask all the time, why is it necessary? So really, what happens is you have a pre-application. You have sight of those relevant documents that you that are in the first part of the schedule, but you always retain your right under 35 to approach the court for the documents that will then be in Part B of the form on the basis. And there's certain things that courts will never allow to be made available, and that will be obviously attorney-client privilege, unless of course the privilege has been lost or been waived. So confidential documents per se are discoverable in action proceedings and in application proceedings. So to that extent, an applicant is never loses the ability to get every document that is relevant. Obviously, the administrator cannot produce a document that is not in their possession, and then the court then would have to order discovery as against that third party and bring that third party to court. And there are discovery rules, alternative rules, that are dealt with that. And that's how it's dealt with. And that's why it's unnecessary in a sense to set it all up here.
The next question. The discovery rules in the High Court are Rule 35. The Rule 35 is the discovery rule. Those rules continue to apply, and indeed we very specifically mention that they continue to apply. We don't refer to 35 because we're looking at discovery rules in the different courts, and so we don't specifically refer to 35. 53 no longer applies because the idea is that these rules will now supplant Rule 53, but only in respect of administrative action. Rule 53 will continue to apply for judicial reviews, okay? Reviews of judicial decisions in lower courts. But that's not administrative action, that's judicial action. So just to be quite clear, Rule 53 isn't repealed. Rule 53 now remains, but solely in respect of the review of judicial action, not administrative action. And I would assume it probably would also apply to executive action, to the extent that they brought that, but let's not complicate the issue. Time frame. The Act was passed in 2000. The Act required rules to be promulgated by 2003. The first set of rules were tabled in 2001. It is now 2009, and we still don't have rules. And really what has happened is the new minister came on board, and he said, we've got to get this done. And really what we sought to do then was to look at the two positions, the departments and the departments and positions, Parliament's concerns, and the Rules Work Board's concerns, and then we try to bring this all together. The Portfolio Committee was unanimous, but I don't know who sat this morning, but this was unanimous. The question then was raised about the abuse of rules, and that this was limited to persons adversely affected. But one should be really quite careful here. Section 5 of PAJA allows requests for reasons and grants that request for reasons only to people who are materially and adversely affected. It does not give people who are in a representative capacity to request rules. So it's only a person who's materially and adversely affected that may request rules. So of course, that doesn't stop a lawyer writing on your behalf and saying, because then it's still you. So the lawyer is not acting in a representative capacity. As lawyers, when we talk about representative capacity, we're talking about a plaintiff or an applicant who represents hundreds or 200. So it's an NGO. It's the Treatment Action Campaign. It might represent a whole range of HIV/AIDS sufferers. That's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about here is an individual, and only individual can request reasons because Section 5 says any person whose rights have been materially and adversely affected by administrative action and has not been given reasons for the action may within 90 days request the administrative concern for such reasons. So that's why Form A is limited only to people who are materially affected. But when you look at disclosure, when you look at the form on disclosure, you will see that is no longer required. All you have to demonstrate is that you have a representative capacity. If the Constitution permits you to give you locus standi, Section 38 of the Constitution says that you can bring a matter in your own interest, you can bring it in a representative capacity, and you can bring it in the public interest. You will see that the form is directed to allowing any person who has such an interest can ask for pre-application and discovery. Then we come to access to information. Now, one of the issues here is that if the Access to Information Act worked properly, we might not have needed a pre-application procedure. But the truth is, it doesn't. And secondly, there's a provision in the promotion of Access to Information Act, which says if you request, if your reason, the motivation for your access is for judicial proceedings, the courts have interpreted that is that you're outside of fire. So the point about the problem here then is that here you have a real interest in bringing an application. That makes you fall outside of fire, and therefore you are making an application for pre-application discovery. So that's the structure in its relationship with PIPE. Then the question was raised around routine reasons for refusal of reason. Well, again, an administrator, if a request comes in, the administrator looks at the request and decides whether to grant the request. Now, if the reasons have already been given, well, of course, that's the ground of refusal. And you'll see that that's echoed in Section 5.1 of the Act of Plancha, in which it says that the person whose right has been materially adversely affected and has not been given reason. The second part, which deals with the publication of reasons and information, is really a development of exactly that idea. When you have thousands of applicants, literally thousands of applicants, then one can make it publicly available by putting it on the, and I suppose I'm again thinking of the fishing example, by informing everybody that the reasons are attached to the notice board on ACM offices up the west coast, and then all the names of the offices where you can get reasons. Where the reasons, by the way, might be, don't think reasons are one page long. Reasons can be 20, 30, 40, 50 pages long. And as long as each person is informed that the reasons are at the MCM offices, and that can be looked at, or at the public library or a post office or whatever, then this facility makes it possible. Let's take the issue of competitive bids. The reasons are placed on the internet, all right, and on the website. The documents are placed on the website. There's a Q&A on the website. The all of the documentation is placed there, and one just then informs each of the applicants, maybe only 10 or 20, that the reasons are on the website. Why reproduce all of this material when indeed they can be informed? So those are the two examples. I might say that in phishing, again, the reasons are made up of what are called generally, in the phishing right, generally produced public reasons, which run to about 30 or 40 pages long. And then each applicant has a form that is filled in where all the points are scored. And that's how they get their points, that they get 57 points, which means that they fall above 50. Therefore, they get a crayfish license. Okay. That form itself is a reason. So it's structured. The reasons are structured. So the form itself is the reason for that particular applicant. Now, to photocopy that huge sheet, fold it up, post it, etc., it's ridiculous. The right thing to do is to inform them by post that they can come and have sight of the their form that's been filled in at MCM offices in town. And indeed, that's what happened. So all that he's putting in there is really to ensure, again, I'm concerned about a burden on the state, but again, it's done with a view of ensuring both accountability and burden don't fall away. And if an administrator misuses that, there's a court here that is going to be monitoring this all the time. Remember, if the request is refused, all right, the applicant can bring an application to demand a request. And there, the validity of the administrator's reason for refusal is going to be scrutinized by a court. So I think that any dangers of in this area are can be dealt with. The third issue is about materially and adversely affected, and again, Chair, the issue flows in relation to request for reason, because it's what Section 5 says. It limits the requester to those who've been materially and adversely affected. But for the rest of the rules, you can apply for pre-application discovery. You can make application in a representative capacity in the public interest, or in the sense that you yourself have had a decision that materially and adversely affects your right. And I hope then that I've covered everything.
I'm looking at
website and everything, who relies on this person in front of him or her to provide this information? To be referred, to say, no, the information is publicly available somewhere there, go and access it somewhere. This person from Buzini who traveled all those case from that rural area to town. Yeah. Except because in our area, we don't have a high court in Kumala, don't know what is in Kumala, to Pretoria. To refer such a person from a rural area, because let's not assume that they were all living in this well to do area where everything is available. I don't know how do you cater for those instances. I understand what you're saying, but let's look at this person. This one proposal from Mbuzim, who needs this provision. How are we catering for this person?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson probably add more on that. It's not everybody that is well to do. I understand that you may instruct an attorney to do this thing. And I think you also provided in the law that you can actually instruct a person who is not an attorney, provided that person is not going to receive any remuneration or any reward from you. Is that person going to be allowed as your true representative, whether it will be said, no, you are not a big pocketbook, and therefore you cannot ask them have access to this information. Or that person will be taken to sworn in and to verify that it is indeed so such a person when he has got the authority in writing that he represents me without any reward.
Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Come in, let's have the doctor come in, so you come in this person. Dr. Vanya.
Honourable Chair, let me start with the last one. I was speaking to our parliamentary officer here. The prior rules, we presented them to this House and they were adopted. However, it appears that they never went to your House for formal adoption. As a result, they cannot be published until that stage step has taken place. We have rules detailed and they've been approved by Parliament. So we're left with one step to finality, and as soon as that gets finalized, it will then be published. Emphasizing, and before I come to the chairperson's question, I want to emphasize also the time sector with regard to these rules. They are long overdue, 8 years, 9 years, etc. The statutory deadline, which was approved by this committee, when it considered the Judicial Matters Amendment Act is that is 28 February this year, which means if by today they are not adopted, they fall on the wayside. We have to look for other years, etc. That's the impact and the significance of today of the deadline. If they are not adopted by the House today, all the efforts and endeavors that have been put in place would have been to the detriment of the people outside. To address the Honourable Chairperson's point, that's exactly what the rules such is. Firstly, this rule will be applicable in a massive court. Now, in Mbuzini and Komati and Gwamfujo, the rule says that if we have to deliver documents, it must be within 25 kilometers from the if they have to be delivered physically. Must be directions from the court, assuming that over time we have to make sure that people have got access, is access to court, etc. within their hands. Currently, with the Rule 53 that is currently up in the High Court,
people from Mbuzini can only file for Rule 53 at the TPD court in Chesquen, Pretoria. They can't go to a local court there and file. They can't even have a form available for them to go and lodge a complaint. Now, honorable member, may be earning enough after the efforts of the Masonic Commission to be able to challenge a decision not to be issued with a passport. And he may initiate those through it. What about a mother in Lusikisiki who an administrator decided to stop a disability payment? The mother will need the very same money to contact any other person. Now the rule says, this rule says, that mother doesn't need money. That mother can go to a court and lodge, can phone, can get information as easily as attainable within their own environment, including the courts which are there, etc. We hope that with access to justice and the spread of the court, etc., that should be easily accessible to that person and to be able to access those forms, etc. And Honorable Chair, you said you wanted to make my day today, and I'm looking forward to today. But you will have made the days for the other millions of people behind who are in a worse situation than I am. And I think if we do that today, it will be one of the most milestones of this parliament for the ordinary people to access and to be able to get justice from the decisions that are taken every day. But they can't challenge them because there are no means to challenge those decisions.
Yeah,
Father
Leroux.
Chairperson, I've been totally convinced and I would like to say let's adopt immediately.
Yeah. No, I maybe if Member Dreda, I'm singing from where I come from and we are singing from the same room book. I'll also really add that we have put this today so that they are kept in the house. That's in the houses where we adopt them formally. Yeah, let me check if there are other questions there. Is there anything you want to say, Mayor Smith, your office? Is there anything you want to say before we dismiss the student gentlemen? Because I want to deal with the Ungena, you know, Ungena. There's a very issue that's coming for us. The customer practice, where we're expected now to take care of our kids that are born out of wedlock. What are we doing about them? So the serious issue is that. Yeah, colleagues, I think we are fine. There was a formal proposal by Honorable Leroux that we accept this this rule so as to enable the department and our judicial office to implement them how they. So I leave it exactly what members raised as concerns. As a formal proposal, can I check if there's any second, colleague? That's Honorable Van der Merwe.
I'll second the question.
So seconded, I want to declare that these rules have been endorsed. After having looked at them and after having satisfied ourselves that the junior house, the National Assembly, has done their work properly, as the senior house were happy that everything was done accordingly. We don't have any reason why can't we accept this rule so that they be implemented. As the senior house, the State Committee on Security and Social Affairs, hereby accept and endorse this rule on behalf of the NCOP. Yeah, there we are. I've made my day. So I think it's a reciprocate for this person.
Chair, the upper house has been.
Yeah, on that note, we are very reasonable. And you owe us big time. You, I choose the same government. Okay. Thanks very much, Jay. Good. Now, back to the customary law. While we're waiting for the department to come, colleagues, just as a reminder, there are issues that we said that we can't put them in the bill. That has to be looked at. They might be reflected in our report. One, we said, what about a child whose father passed on before? No. A child who was not fathered by a father member, right? Yes. But the child grew up in the very same house, right? And that particular child as well has to inherit, like all the kids of the late father. Is the child entitled to inherit as well or not? Number two, if I married Honorable Nyanda, she had not those kids. I came with my baggage of my own kids while in this marriage. If it happens that unfortunately she passed on, I my kids entitled to inherit from her. Three, if two women who had their kids from their previous marriage decide to get married in terms of the new legislation, same sex marriage act, if one of them passed on, are the kids of this other woman entitled to inherit from the estate of this other partner who passed on? Four, as a traditional leader, Let me stop here. Those are the issues that we said we must refer them to the minister, and the minister must refer them to the law commission, because we can give them some ultimatum or some, you know, to say parliament must report back the department must report back to parliament on a given period. I'm still coming out with the catalogue of all those instances. Now, another example we said there. As you know, that as our customer practices, if my brother passed on, in terms of affecting our culture, I can be mandated to look after my brother's wife and the kids. You know, you understand what I mean? Look after her. Look after her. Now, take care of that family. Formally, that will now be my house as well. And I'll look after those kids and everything. Now, if it happens that I also pass on, are the kids of my brother going to inherit equally like my own biological kids? That's a question that was not answered, because we struggled with this question for the past 4 months. We couldn't get the proper answer. What's the scenario here? Because in our culture, those kids are now mine. They benefit people like mine, but in terms of this new legislation, what will be the arrangement? Another example that was given by members is that if a certain leader who is a woman went to marry a Ken's wife, a child was born by one of the senior royal members in the family. Now this poor kid, as we said in the previous meeting, one member of the family would whisper to this kid to say, by the way, your parental father is this one. Now, in terms of our culture, the known
figure in the family, the senior figure in the family, is this tradition leader who happens to be a woman, right? The head wife married, she is married in the name of this tradition leader who happens to be a woman. But the person who wants to plant a seed in that head wife is another man who must not be known by everybody here. If it is whispered to this chair, no, by the way, your biological father is this one here, what's going to happen if these people claim that, no, because I know that my father is Mzizi, I want to inherit from him? What will happen now? Because in terms of this education, we are saying kids must benefit from the biological father. But also saying we are trying to avoid double dipping. What are we going to say now? Because in equal fact, in terms of our culture, this poor kid must inherit from this tradition leader who happens to be a woman, because she is now in cause the father. I don't want to quote you. Yeah. Those are the questions that are there. I know there are many other questions that have to be reflected in our report. But those are unanswered questions that as a community we raise. And I wonder if Mr. Smith, with your team, were able to assist us in this case. Because as members, we really soldiered on, struggled. We did everything in our power to see if we could get ourselves to this one. I went as far as meeting the Minister of Justice, who said, no, he will be able to assist me. I went and gave him all this challenge. He raised his hand and said, no. I don't think I'm qualified to assist you here. This thing, just throw them wherever. I'm not exaggerating, that's what I did. I made a meeting in his office. We talked about this. Do we can bail me out while there? Lies in office. And Mr. Rajman was there as well. All what I said, I raised here. The department could also give their assistance. That's what our colleagues say. Can you remind me, because I want the secretary to really report all these concerns that they want to refer to the law commission and the minister. So those must reflect in our meeting. Yeah, the department are still coming. They are still laying in the meeting. They said we must call them when we are done with the about the Pajar rule. Minister Smith, do you want to address us on this issue?
Yes, sir, even Minister can't give the answer. I can't. I think your feeling what you envisage is that the matter be referred back to the Law Commission might be the solution, and even listing all the questions that you have. The Commission did a lot of research, and they have capable people there. They consulted widely, and I think that would be the best way forward in relation to your concerns.
Yes. Colleagues, is there something you want to raise so that we note all those concerns that we raised? Why is the department still coming? Are there issues that you think were omitted?
Chairperson, I don't think there's anything, but now my worry is that if it's now been referred back to the Law Commission, the consultation, which I'm afraid of, it will be only the elite people that they will consult. And they'll find again trapped in the same situation where they are trapped. And I would suggest that even the traditional leaders should be consulted, because they are the custodians of all these things. These things have actually been brought to them. They will be able to assist you rather than us telling you, because what we are saying is what we learn from them. That's the wisdom which comes from them.
Let me check with our parliamentary advisor if you want to address us on this issue that we raised from the legal point of view of another. No,
Chair, I think these are really complex issues that we cannot find answers to overnight. I think really it is imperative that a research be commissioned to further investigate this matter. And I agree with Honorable Mzizi that traditional community not be left behind. And perhaps the committee report, it might help for it to specifically instruct the law commission or those who will research on this matter to extensively consult with the traditional community. Thank you.
Yeah, on that note, if there are no other questions, I think we can take a 5 minutes comfort break. One way for the department to come so that we further rehearse these issues.